Hello everybody, it's day 4 of the Jagd und Hund 2024. My today's guest is Tinashe Faravo from Zimbabwe. Tinashe, I'm very happy that you're here with me today.
Oh, thank you, Max, and good day to our viewers and listeners.
What are we talking about today? I said to you, because you're from Zimbabwe, I think there's a lot of topics that we can talk about. Maybe you can just introduce Zimbabwe to all the people here and what you can actually do in the country and why we should come to Zimbabwe. I think that's a good start.
Okay. Thank you very much, Max. Zimbabwe is a very beautiful country located in the southern part of Africa. On the south, there's South Africa. On the western side, there's Botswana. On the northern side, there's Zambia. On the eastern side, there's Mozambique. So we're at the center of southern Africa.
Yeah.
And we are a country which is blessed with a lot of animals. We have the second largest elephant population in the world at 100,000 elephants. We have the fourth largest rhino population in Africa after Namibia, South Africa, and Kenya. We have a healthy population of lions. So if you're thinking of an adventure hunting, think of Zimbabwe. And we are a warm country. We have big parks right across the country where we have our iconic national park, Wange National Park, which is 14,620 square kilometers, where we have the biggest concentration of elephants across the globe. So Zimbabwe is the place to be, is the place where we have your Musea Tunya, the Victoria Falls, the one of the seven wonders of the world, is the country where we have the Matobos, the five World Heritage Sites in Zimbabwe, Manapus, you mentioned them. One of the biggest man-made dams in the world, Kariba Dam, for tiger fishing. You mentioned it. Zimbabwe is a wonderful country. So please come to Zimbabwe and enjoy.
I think you're a very good salesperson of getting people to your country. I think we should take this as an advertisement. And yes, I can 100% relate to that. But why we're here today, I think it's also to talk about the hunting why hunting is important for the country and why there should not be a ban on hunting and also on the trophy import. I think that's a very important part, and I think also that we should talk a little bit about ethics. But let's first start about the hunting, why hunting is important for Zimbabwe.
Oh, thank you very much. I need the world to know that hunting is very important for Zimbabwe, not only for cultural reasons, because the country has been hunting since time immemorial. But the hunting proceeds are also benefiting our communities, which lives around our national parks. Hunting is very important because it raises money for communities, especially those who bear the brand of sharing borders with wildlife. We are able to create employment for our people. We are able to build clinics for them, provide medicine in those clinics, building schools. So we are talking of more than 1 million people who are benefiting from hunting in Zimbabwe as a 2022 figures. And we are looking forward to have more people benefiting from hunting. Hunting also is also a way of sustainably managing our wildlife, because when you hunt, we do an offtake, which is scientifically proven. We do a scientific process to make sure that we hunt sustainably without affecting the biodiversity.
So what you're saying is that, like, if I come from Germany as a hunter to Zimbabwe, that a lot of money goes back into the communities and people live off this money, right?
Exactly. When you hunt, the proceeds mainly go to communities who bear the brand of living with wildlife. What we have done as a government is also to amend the Parks and Wildlife Management Authority, which deals with the campfire, our community-based natural resource management, where traditional leaders play a critical role in deciding what to do with the proceeds from hunting. So definitely the money benefits the community, the money benefits the people of Zimbabwe, the money benefits the wildlife themselves. Because what we also believe in as a country is to make sure that the animals must also pay for their upkeep. There's a lot of work which we put in to make sure that the animals are managed. For an example, we also need to put resources to fight poaching, to fight illegal activities within the parks. Those things need money. They need resources. So we believe that the animals themselves must pay for their upkeep. Because as you all know that as a government or as a country, we have other social competing needs like your education, your food. So it means that the elephants or the animals themselves must pay for their upkeep, because we would have more resources, more vehicles, more people on the ground, more patrols, so that at least we sustainably manage our wildlife.
100%. We had quite a negative documentary this Monday in Germany from the, it was not a, it's like a public channel that did it, and they said that most of the money will never come to the population, and I think that's not true. Sorry.
There's no evidence to that.
Yep.
Every time we've always been saying people must come and see things on the ground, so that they can make an informed decision. It's unfortunate that people make decisions based on emotions. Most people are emotional when it comes to wildlife. They don't want to be practical and realistic. The processes that we do as a country are science-based, evidence-based, so that at least we manage our wildlife. We have always been encouraging, especially those who criticize us, to come down there, see for themselves, talk to communities, talk to people who are affected by these things, not to make decisions from some air-conditioned offices here in Dortmund or in
10,000 kilometers away from the problem.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So we encourage people to go and see things for themselves. Talk to communities, talk to people who are affected by wildlife.
You said that a lot of the money and resources also goes into poaching. I think that when there's wildlife, there's always poaching. Like it's a bad symbiosis, but it's still there. Can you tell us why there is poaching and what you actually do against the poaching?
What we've done over the years, we've noticed that, for example, I can give you an example where rhino horn trade has been banned since 1975, but trade in the product has not stopped. Elephant horns has been banned since 1989, but the trade in elephant horns has not stopped. So there's enough evidence to show that banning of trade of these products will not stop the problem, because the market is there. So what we need to do, what we think needs to be done, is to flood the market with the resource, so that at least people can buy legitimately from the resource. As I'm speaking to you now, we are sitting on plus 100,000 tons of elephant horns that we have harvested over the years, and that stockpile, if we sell it, we can legitimately get the money to support the communities, to do the anti-poaching, to do law enforcement, to do a lot of things to make sure that the elephants are safe, the animals are safe. So what that means is, at the end of the day, we then take the resources, we buy vehicles, we buy fuel, we pay the officers who do on patrol 21 days in the bush looking after the animals. Surely these people must be taken good care of, because they need resources. For them to do the work well, they need vehicles, they need fuels, they need uniforms themselves. So yes, it's important to make sure that we monetize the resource that we have, we create value out of it. If it means even projects like value addition, we can do rings, belts from the elephant hides, from the elephant horns, all those things, so that at least we can monetize the resource that we have.
Yes, I mean, that's also the small people that live off this. For example, manufacturing those goods. But you said that there's about 100,000 tons of elephant horn. And I mean, if you would flood the market with this one, no animal would be harmed. It's already there.
It's already there. There's no need for you to go to an illegal market, because the market is there. Because historically, we used to do culling as a way of controlling the elephant population.
Yes.
We last did that in 1987, more than 30 years ago. So what that means is, when elephants, they're mortals, they're like you and me, they also die. When they die, we retrieve the ivory for safekeeping. It means it's money that we are talking about. So there's no evidence which have been proved to us beyond any reasonable doubt that if we legally sell the ivory horn, it will increase illegal poaching. Over the years, maybe the last 2-3 years, we have not recorded any single elephant which was poached in one of the biggest parks in the country, because we are putting resources together. We are working with a lot of partners. So our main message is to make sure that people must come and see things for themselves, for the benefit
and
of humanity.
And not judge without knowing.
Exactly. And not relying on social media posts, on faceless people on social media who sometimes have never been to Zimbabwe. It's unfortunate, it's a pity. Most people have never been there. But they make comments based on emotions, based on baseless and faceless characters on social media.
I mean, it's always, we have been talking a lot about social media and how social media affects the hunting. So it's a, I think it's a very important part to actually understand everything that's happened behind the picture, and not only the picture themselves. Like, you have to understand the communities that live off the picture. That's why, for example, when we go to the, when we go hunting as a company, for example, we don't only show the trophy, we show also like in a, in the post of the community that were affected by it, the people that worked with the hunting and et cetera, et cetera. And I think, Not to say that what we do is right, but I think that's the way to go, actually, because you need to educate people on the process of hunting. That hunting is not only to pull the trigger, but that hunting is actually the conservation and keeping a sustainable use of the wildlife.
Exactly, because as I'm speaking to you now, over the years, because the our populations have been always been increasing over the years, and when the populations increase, it's a sign that something good is being done to manage the resource. And those numbers, when the elephants move, they move around looking for water, food, and at the end of the day, they ended up in communities, clashing with communities, and in some cases with fatalities, and in some cases people are killed by these elephants, but they have nothing to show. So our main message, our Clarion call, is to make sure that communities must benefit from the God-given resource around them.
Can you tell us what happens if the communities don't benefit of it when there's human wildlife conflict, and why you are a good example of handling it?
We have had reports where we recorded what we call retaliatory killings. When communities don't benefit, if they know that they're not benefiting, when the elephants go into their communities, they are poisoned, they are poached, the lions are poached. So if they benefit, they are seeing that animal as an economic opportunity. They are seeing a job for their child. They are seeing a clinic from the community. Imagine every time you sleep with lions roaring the whole night, and you know that the next morning you want to send your children to school, you want to send your children to look for cattle. It's so traumatic. But at least if they benefit, they will definitely inform authorities. If there are poachers around, they will definitely protect the resource, because they are seeing an economic opportunity from the wildlife.
Tinashe, what you are saying is so true, and I really think that it's like a very, very important part of hunting as well, to bring the money to the people. And there's always human wildlife conflict, and I think when there, as you said, there, the poisoning starts when there's retaliation killings. But the poisoning is not only affecting the actual animal that killed the people.
Exactly.
There's like byproduct, like when you do fishing, you know, everything goes into the net. It's not only the animal that you actually want.
There are also vultures, which can feed on the dead animals. There are also hyenas, which feeds on the dead animals.
And they die.
They die because of the poisoning. So it's something that is serious that we need to consider.
Okay. What is sustainable hunting for you and for Zimbabwe? Like, how do you endorse this, and what is important for sustainable hunting?
What we do when we do hunting, like I'm saying, it's a scientific process where we involve the participants within the community, be it community leaders, be it landholders, everyone participates, so that at least our main aim, we don't want our children or our grandchildren to be told of tell stories that once upon a time there were lions in this area, once upon a time there were elephants. So what we also do, there are a lot of ethics that are involved when it comes to hunting. For an example, we don't hunt female buffaloes. We don't hunt female lions. The lions that we deal with, for example, are male at the age of 6, for example. If a lion is 6 years old, it's old enough. And normally lions in the wild, it's rare for them to get to 12 years. So we look at the mane of the animal, so that we look at age. So there are a lot of ethics, and any hunt is accompanied by a wildlife ranger, a well-trained, so that we can also control and monitor. And for those who violate those regulations or those rules, they are banned, they are suspended, and many other punishments that we have put in place to make sure that at least we follow the rules and regulations in sustainably managing our resources.
I have to laugh because I can really relate what you were saying, and I think it's very important to say that because the whole process is so crucial to a country, and I think there's if there's some black sheep not following it, I think this is really good what you just said, that there's that they will be banned from the hunting, that there will be
they pay fines, so that at least we manage, so that we also control wayward behavior. But every hunt is accompanied by wildlife ranger. No, we have had cases, of course, where people sometimes it's mandatory that you move around with the wildlife ranger. When you identify an animal, you also we agree that this is the right age, this is the right trophy, not to affect the wildlife.
A lot of people think that there's an underpopulation and that there's not enough animals of certain species. But because I'm a hunter and I know, and because you just said it as well, there's in some certain species, there's also an overpopulation and maybe like an overpopulation of what the land can actually use, which means that the habitat of the animal will fall. Can you explain to the people or to the viewers, please, what happens if there's, for example, too many elephants, and what happens to the actual habitat, and maybe that they're actually destroying themselves by being too many?
What we have created, or what we want to create into the future, are a complete biodiversity. We don't want to create an elephant park. You know, we have always been saying the biggest threat to the survival of our elephants is themselves, because they are destroying their own habitat. You know very well that when elephants are moving, they have a tendency of knocking down trees. As I'm speaking to you now, there was a research which was commissioned where, because elephants knock down trees, and I can give you an example of vultures. Vultures can only breed at a certain height of a tree. And when the trees are not there, it means the breeding cycle of their vultures is affected, which means the vultures will move in other areas. There's a certain type of species, for example, that the animals prefer, acacia. And when the animals are overpopulated, like in our case, it means the trees are affected. You can hardly see a baobab tree in Manapu's National Park, for example. You can hardly see a young acacia plant in Wange, because the animals are overpopulated. And what we are simply saying, Wange National Park, I keep on referring to, it's one of our biggest, it's the biggest national park in Zimbabwe, and where we have the biggest concentration of elephants probably in the world. When the animals move in that kind of direction, they destroy trees. They're also affected. Through of late, we've been facing a lot of drought, El Nino-induced drought, where we have shortages of water. And the animals, because they need a lot of water, they are affected, they die. So these things, to manage them, we need to manage our populations. 14,620 square kilometers, it means we need 15,000 elephants in Wange National Park. But we are talking of plus 45,000. So we've more than doubled the ecological carrying capacity of the park. What we are simply saying is, there's evidence to that effect, that one elephant, one square kilometer. So when we have more elephants, it means we are overpopulated. It means the biodiversity is affected. It means other animals are affected. If you go to Wange, especially at the peak of the dry season, around October, right at the onset of the rain season, you'd see that the small water holes that are there, they are dominated by elephants. So what are you going to do with other animals? What are you going to do with your impalas? What are you going to do with, because the elephants,
giraffes,
yeah, and many others. So it means we need to have a balance, a complete biodiversity where we control the numbers. Over the years, we used to do culling, like I mentioned earlier on, but because there's been a lot of resistance from people who say it's cruel, it's not right, but we must do it so that we can manage our resource in a sustainable manner. The more the populations grow, it means clashes with communities, it means clashes with other. People lose their crops destroyed, people being killed. Last year alone, 2023, we lost about 50 lives due to human wildlife conflict. 85 people were injured. They have nothing to show for it. So hunting at least comes as a measure to deal with that problem, so that at the end of the day, they have something to show for it. Like I said earlier, they see the elephant as an economic opportunity for their children. They are seeing a job. They are seeing a clinic. They are seeing a road. They are seeing at least a survive.
Chance.
Exactly. So at the end of the day, there's that kind of support. So we call upon people, especially who criticize us without going on the ground, to go and see for themselves. We are open, we are transparent, we can help them. Even if they think that we will interfere with their interviews, they can go on their own and do things for themselves.
You have a booth here in Hall 7, right?
Yes.
So if people are interested in talking to you, they can come to you and have a good discussion with you about why they should come to Zimbabwe, right?
Yes, they have every reason to come to Zimbabwe. It's a world of wonders, Zimbo.
100%. Tinashe, thank you so much for coming to our podcast today, and that we had the opportunity to talk to you. I think it was a very interesting talk, and I think you said a lot of very important points about sustainable wildlife management and use of habitat and how hunting should be done. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Max. Thanks to your viewers.